Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
Along the near side, Krejci for Miller. His shot knocked down. That hit Brendan Dillon, and he's a little slow to get up. He's hobbling. Dillon trying to get to the bench. That shot stung him. Hit him low in the boot somewhere. Here's Oshie with a shot. They score! Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Boston! Capitals up 1-0 in his best of seven with an overtime thriller here in the district.
Welcome back to Japers Rink Radio. I'm your host, Greg Young. And today, I'm joined by John Press. And John, we kind of threw this one together last minute. We were both in the Slack, and I asked if you wanted to come on and do it. And you said yes. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, all things considered. Enjoying the weather, enjoying other things about life that are not necessarily hockey related. So, you know, it's important to balance those out a little bit more, especially when the hockey part's going a little rockier than we'd like.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It was actually funny. I was watching the game with a couple of friends last night, and they were, as soon as the Caps lost in double overtime, I leaned over to them and I said, oh, well, you know, I'm doing a lot of traveling. I'm not sure I could, like, really have the time for the Caps to go on this long run. And they were laughing at me, realizing right. that this is the kind of justification that a broken human being does. And that's
sure.
I've accepted that. So I guess, JP, let's start open-ended. How are we feeling about the Caps play right now?
I mean, there are things that you like about it. There are things that are very troubling. I think at the top of the things that you like about it, both of the goaltenders who played since Vanecek got hurt have been very good. Craig Anderson was very good, surprisingly so, in my opinion. And then getting the surprise start in Game 3, Ilya Samsonov was very, very good until he wasn't. And, you know, that overshadows a guy who played 80 minutes of pretty good hockey, especially given his circumstances coming back, not having played with the team in almost 3 weeks. He made the saves he should make. He made a bunch of saves that he probably shouldn't have made. And that's
encouraging. Taking the breakaway with Pasternak for one there.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. He got some help from his defense. And I thought in Game 3, I thought through 60 minutes, the Caps were the better team, frankly. And then something happened at the intermission before overtime. The Bruins came out, completely dominated that first overtime session. And if it wasn't for Samsonov's great play, he would never even have been in the position to make that colossal fuck up that he made in double overtime.
Yeah. Well, and that's the tricky part, right? Is I think a lot of Caps fans, like, we've struggled analytically with it, right? Of whether, you know, I mean, do you want to just say, oh, we should blame it on Samsonov because, you know, if he hadn't screwed it up, then they wouldn't have won, or they would have, you know, maybe they were getting up late, but okay, maybe you get lucky or something like that. Or do we say, okay, like, the only reason they were even in that position is because of Samsonov's struggle, you know, of him doing really well and particularly bailing out the Caps in the first overtime. So I guess kind of how do you think about that? And also, I guess with this, I'll throw in the Twitter dialogue thing, which I'm rolling my eyes about, but about how Alex Ovechkin was yelling seemingly at Samsonov in Russian at the end of the game after the blunder.
Yeah, I don't even want to address that. A passionate captain in the moment, frustrated, whatever. I think it's not a thing. How do you balance it? You know, this is kind of the Caps, unfortunately. And I mean, in full disclosure, I don't watch enough of other teams. I'm sure that every team thinks that they have guys who make these soul crushing mistakes at the worst times. But, you know, it's not, maybe not quite as visible, but Nick Dowd goes out and he scores the go ahead goal and he's set to be the hero. And then he takes just a terrible penalty in the middle of the third period, hooking McAvoy behind the play. And, you know, the Bruins come back and score on that power play. So it's sort of, you know, Samsonov, Dowd, it's sort of emblematic of this team in a lot of ways that they play well and play well enough to take leads. And then they piss away those leads, like the Taylor Hall goal in game two. The Caps have had 5-1 goal leads in this series, and every single time the Bruins scored the next goal. And in fairness, the Bruins have had 2-1 goal leads, and both times the Caps came back and scored the next goal. So, you know, leads haven't been safe in this series. But the big difference is that the Bruins' underlying numbers with the lead, tiny, tiny sample, of course, because the Caps have had more leads during the game. But the Bruins are at like 80% goals for expected goals for with the lead. And the Caps are at like 20% or something. So,
yeah,
you know, I think the Caps play with the lead has been shoddy. It's something that I'm writing about in the narrative that's going to run on Friday. Their play in the with the lead is shoddy. And, you know, it's a volume issue. When you've got that volume, then you're giving yourself more opportunities for these colossal mistakes. Right. It's just simple math, right? Like if you just say to yourself, one out of every 10 shots that the other team takes, somebody on the Caps is going to fuck it up so bad that it's going to end up in the back of the Caps net. Well, if those 10 shots come in 5 minutes or if they come in 20 minutes, it makes a difference between whether you're going to win or you're going to lose. So,
yep.
Or be tied or whatever. But it's a volume issue, and then it's like a mental focus type issue, it seems. I mean, you look at the goals they've given up in this series, and credit to Boston for putting on the pressure and everything like that. But I think well over half of them look self-inflicted, or at least there's a guy you can point to and say, man, if that guy hadn't played that wrong, you know, if you know, in the overtime goal that Marchand scores in game two, people point the fingers at Dylan for that blind pass up the boards. But, you got to also look at Carl Hagelin going for a line change when he's supposed to be supporting that pass from Dylan.
Where the heck was Justin Schultz on that play, for instance?
Too. Yeah. I mean, after that turned into a goat rodeo, it got weird, Yeah, I mean, it just, the mental acuity, the focus sometimes with this team doesn't necessarily seem to be where it should be. And in fairness, I would wager that most fans of most teams feel the same way about their team.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. The interesting thing is I was kind of contrasting because I was watching the Caps game at the same time as I was watching Nashville and Carolina, and I really can't stand a lot of Carolina's like outwardness or whatever, like everything they do that's not on the ice. But watch Carolina with the lead, and it's a different thing. And like, and particularly for me, I look at something like zone exits as being where when the Caps, it seems like they just, whenever Boston really ramps up the forecheck, they really struggle, and I struggle to think of, like, you know, is it an execution thing? Are the Caps gassed? Like, kind of what's going on with that? But that's something that really it seems like when Boston amps up that pressure, it's something the Caps really struggle with, no?
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's a perfect example of something that in the playoffs, that is the kind of thing that will let you know a lot of what you need to know about a coach and his ability to adjust. And, you know, we saw, especially 2 years ago in that Carolina series, Todd Reirden had no answers whatsoever for Carolina's pressure. I think that Laviolette's got better answers. I mean, the structure of breakouts all season long has been night and day from Todd Reirden's Caps. And so I think that the possibility is there to make those changes and the necessary changes. But like we said, if you got guys going for a line change when they need to be supporting a breakout, you know, that ain't on the coach. So, you know, I think it may be a question of health as well, especially when we're talking about John Carlson. I know that a lot of people are not the biggest fan of his play in the defensive zone, but you look at that guy and he can barely pass the puck. He can barely shoot the puck.
Yeah. He's gassed, I think. It's pretty clear.
Well, yeah, I mean,
or hurt. I mean, hurt. Whichever. Yeah,
he looks hurt to me,
say.
But
yeah.
But what do I know? I mean, the guy missed games at the end of the year, and you know, he and Backstrom, the guys who missed games at the end of the year, other than Ovi, you know, they don't all just miraculously get to 100% come playoff time. I mean, these are still lingering things, and you know, to me, maybe it's sort of wishful thinking that Carlson and Backstrom are hurt, because if they're not hurt and this is how they're playing, the Caps, if this is their future, then that's troubling. But, you know, I think you look at John Carlson, and that's a guy who is a lot better than what he's showing right now. So I think they need to rejigger some things. And this is where Peter Laviolette's going to make his money, you know, in figuring out how to answer. I mean, to me, the fact that he's played three overtime games with this Boston team and had the lead in the second half of every single one of each of the three games, to me, that speaks volumes about how good a coach he is. I mean, on paper, this wasn't supposed to be a series. This was.
I picked Boston in five. I think you were in a similar place with that. Yep. And yeah, I mean, like, and that's, I mean, mostly paper, because you can't really say how a coach is going to react in the playoffs or not before it really happens.
Right. I mean, this wasn't supposed to be a series. This was supposed to be 60-40 or 70-30 or something, at least. And the Caps have been right there. They've had a chance to win every, you know, with any given shot, they could have won each game. In each of those games, during the game, they were over 70% likely to win the game per money puck. So, you know, I think that speaks volumes about the job that Laviolette's done. And especially when you look up and down the roster and, you know, tell me who you think's playing great. You know, it's not like they're, other than the goalies
the
making
line,
some stops.
Maybe?
Yeah. I mean, it's the fourth line. That's it. You know, they're not getting scoring from anywhere else at 5-on-5. I mean, at 5-on-5, they have two goals from Dowd, two goals from Hathaway, a goal from Dillon, and a goal from Wilson. You know, nothing from Ovi, nothing
Mantha,
from Backstrom, nothing from Mantha. I think Mantha's look good, but, you know, at some point you still got to put the puck actually in the net. You know, Oshie, I'm going to give Oshie a pass because he has contributed with some assists.
He has been a fucking warrior this year.
Yeah. And he's just gutted it out. He does whatever they ask of him. And
he's clearly not 100% either, yeah. I think.
So,
yeah.
Right. So he's a guy I give a pass to. But then, you know, I wasn't overly impressed with Kuznetsov's first game back. You know, Connor Sherry's been a total zero for me so far. you know, they benched Sprong because they saw some things on tape that they didn't like defensively. Eller's out. So, you know, really, you know, in a lot of ways, you look at this and it's damn near miraculous that the Caps are where they are, which I don't know if that's a pessimistic view or an optimistic view, but it's, you know, I don't know. That's how I see it right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I think it's tough because honestly, like 2-1, like you, I mean, you could see this, I think, like being 3-0 Boston up to 2-1 Caps. And like, you know, I think any one of those results would have felt plausible to me. I mean, whenever you have three games that go to overtime, like anything can happen in overtime. But speaking of overtime, I kind of want to, it seemed like the game last night with kind of the way the Caps fell apart in overtime. It's hard for me not to at least be a little bit concerned because, I mean, and obviously I've expressed this to you and I've expressed this in other places that like the Caps, I don't know, it kind of feels at times like they're being constructed with scotch tape at this point, and the overtimes maybe have felt at times like that's where the scotch tape has started to come off a little bit. So do you think, one, all of these overtime games are just a concern for the Caps in general, and two, do you kind of buy the separation between that the Bruins maybe have shown in a couple of these overtimes?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, the Caps are the oldest team in the league. And
this was before they got Zdeno Chara, by the way.
Yeah, and before they got Craig Anderson. You know, they're not a young team. They're not a particularly fast team, even when they're fresh as a daisy.
Even pre-Vrana trade, yeah.
Right. I mean, they are a grinded out type of team. And I think that can be troubling when they're playing a team that is really pushing the pace the way that the Bruins have been. Like, you know, if they were playing three straight overtime games against the Islanders, I don't think it would look like this. It would look more like two teams in quicksand, you know, trying
kind of
to,
like the 0-0 game that they played against the Islanders a few weeks ago or whatever.
Yeah. Or even the Penguins, frankly, you know, I think that, you know, it would look a little different. So I buy it in that they really, you know, the way the Bruins play up and down right now is it's a lot and it takes a toll. And, you know, it's not the physical toll of playing the Islanders where they're, you know, they've got idiots like Casey Cizikas running your defenseman from behind every time they go to pick up a puck. But it is a physical toll in that you're just skating a lot. And defending a lot and blocking a lot of shots.
Well, I was gonna say, look at the perfection line, right? Or I know you hate calling it that, but like, look at the Bergeron line, right? Like, if you want to, you can always tell whenever they're the ones on the ice, not just by looking at the jersey numbers, but by looking at them in the offensive zone and just how much they freaking skate.
Yep. And yeah, I mean, every time that line touched the puck in overtime, you got worried that the game was about to end. You know, I think the Caps have done a reasonable job. Taylor Hall is having a great series, but I think they've done a reasonable job on that line overall. And their bottom six, you know, has broken through with a couple, but it has, you know, nothing outrageous.
Super threatening, you would say, yeah.
But the that top line, as we knew it would be, has been a lot of trouble. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that they've absolutely gone off since Lars Eller has been unavailable to the Caps.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, I had him as my key player in the series. I've talked about that quite a bit. And I mean, because, and I guess I'm going to kind of branch off this way. You know, it seems to me like the Caps' idea of just playing pure matchups with Boston's perfection line, you know, is... it's tough for me to look at that and say that it's working, although obviously in game one, they seem to be able to get by with it. But I guess kind of if Eller's out for a while, or like, you know, if even if he's back, Do you think the Caps are going to try to balance the matchups there? And do you think there's any maybe roster decisions or lineup decisions that they could do to kind of balance out the matchups with the Boston top line? Or do you think it's just going to kind of be the Caps having to ride their horses against Boston horses and kind of seeing who comes out on top?
Well, I mean, if it's going to be power versus power, that's not going to work for the Caps.
It won't. I agree.
It just won't. Like, you look at the series that Alex Ovechkin has had right so far. He looked very good in game one. He looked like he was about to bust loose and just go on one of those tears. In game two, less so. And then in game three, he was not very good. He was
but it was like him kind of just being in the right place deal, you know?
Right. And that was
mostly Manta. Yeah.
So, you know, at 5-on-5, and you know, and why is that? Why, you know, is Ovi tired? Is he worn down? No, I think what it is that in game one, he saw an awful lot of Boston's third pair, Kevin Miller and Jeremy Lauzon, and the Krejci line at 5-on-5, and he had his best game. And then in game two, it was more of a balance where, for whatever reason, Laviolette was just playing his guys. Maybe he was feeling like he didn't want Boston to dictate when he uses Alex Ovechkin, that kind of thing, which, you know, a lot of coaches just abhor line matching for that very reason. But, sure. You know, it is what it is. And then in game three, he got a lot of McAvoy and Grizzlick and the Bergeron line, and he didn't do shit. And, you know, that's what having that last line change, having home ice advantage is, and that for Ovechkin, he's not going to be successful against that line. So if given the choice, I think it's really important for Laviolette to figure out a way to get Ovechkin away from that fivesome and get him into some better matchups. Now, getting Kuznetsov back helps. Getting Eller back would also help.
Really help,
especially, I mean, and getting Eller back would, especially once it shifts back to Washington, would help a lot, because then, you know, you can put Eller out against those guys and, you know, hopefully handle them. But right now, you know, you're in Boston, you're kind of at the rim of whatever Bruce Cassidy wants to do. But, you know, I also think splitting Ovechkin and Backstrom will help. If Kuznetsov can come anywhere near the Kuznetsov that we know he can be at times, you know, at this time of year especially, then, you know, maybe they do have a chance. Or, you know, if Mantha starts getting hot and Backstrom finds his touch, you know, maybe they have to decide where they're putting the Bergeron line, and whichever one's not getting the Bergeron line can maybe exploit the rest of the Boston lineup. But I mean, the goal for the Caps coming into this series was always going to be, best case scenario, you saw off the Bergeron line and then beat the Bruins down the lineup. And that's pretty much what happened in game one. It didn't happen in game two. It didn't happen in game three. And, you know, if you're going to get beat, I guess get beat by their best. But the Caps need to figure out a way to get back to limiting that top line and being able to beat them with their bottom nine.
Yeah, and this kind of transitions perfectly to the next thing I wanted to ask about, which is we're talking a lot about the Caps kind of forward lineup. And, I mean, to me, when you look defensively, two of the bigger problems are, I just frankly don't think Justin Schultz has been healthy for 2 months now. And I think Carlson obviously is playing through something, whether that's a combination of fatigue or injury. I don't know exactly. However you want to demarcate it, but I think it's pretty clear they're not doing that. So I will be fully transparent here and say that I stole your idea for my latest piece for Jake's Rink in terms of your suggestions for the deep pairs. But I mean, I just kind of explain what your thinking is behind, you know, let's start with this. How would you potentially rearrange the deep pairs, and what do you think the kind of advantages would be for those suggestions that you had that I've put into words? Yeah. I also didn't credit you for, but I'll do that now.
It's okay. We're all on the same team. So I think, so first of all, I did think that Carlson in game three got better in
the game went on, which surprised me.
Rocky start, but I thought he did play better. But to me, right now, their best defenseman is Dmitry Orlov, and I don't think it's necessarily all that close. And so that's a guy that I think you want in your top pair. He's been he's been very good offensively. He's done a good job on the left side stopping Pasternak on the entry. I think that his numbers have suffered, frankly, as a result of Carlson's play to an extent. So I put Dmitry Orlov in my first pair. And then, you know, you look at who he's been successful with this season. And the guy he's been most successful with also happens to be a guy who's been very good through three games. And that's Nick Jensen. Mm-hmm. Now, Jensen's played a third pair role with the matchups that come along with it. But, you know, he's been good. He can skate. So I use that as my first pair. In my second pair, I think Brendan Dillon's actually been pretty good this series.
Surprisingly so. I think he hasn't been obviously burned, at least from what
I've seen. Well, yeah, I mean, people bury him for the overtime goal in game two, but I think he's been pretty good, and he was really good down the stretch this year playing with Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who I think is a enormous upgrade over Justin Schultz defensively. And I don't think Justin Schultz is providing enough offense to justify being in the lineup right now, frankly. So my second pair is Dillon and Schultz and Van Riemsdyk. And then my third pair is Chara, and who has been playing very well as well. And Carlson, if Carlson can still go, and if he can't, then you put Justin Schultz there. Chara and Carlson actually were very good this year when they were in limited time together, and that was against some tough opponents. So I think that's potentially a pair that works. But if Carlson just can't, if he's hurting the team by playing, then you play Schultz instead of him. So that's how I would have it shake out right now. I think it'd be worth a try. But again, you know, this is a team that just lost 3-2. So it's not like they're giving up too many goals.
Sure. It's not like they're giving up six a night or whatever, you know.
No, but the underlying numbers don't look great to me. And if you're going to bench a guy like Daniel Sprong, who it provides more 5-on-5 offense than just about anyone on this team, if you're going to bench him because you don't like the way he plays defense, maybe look at your defensemen and think about the way they play defense. So, and what options you have there. Trevor Van Riemsdyk's very, very solid. And to me should be in this lineup right now, given how this series has gone so far.
Yeah, and I think there's two big ways that I think that I am with you on the D pairs, as I wrote about. I think there's two big things that this could help. I mean, one is just a simple thing of Van Riemsdyk can, like, you know, he's not played a ton this year. He's presumably going to be a lot fresher. I think that however you want to demarcate the injuries versus fatigue issue with the Caps blue line, I think that clearly there's some of both going on. And so just literally having a fresh player in the lineup might just do good by that, just inherently. But I think the other thing that it could do is potentially balance out the lineup a little bit. I mean, right now, you look at the ice time, and I mean, it's somewhat balanced, but again, the Caps are having to play John Carlson just these huge minutes that I don't know if he can continue to play, frankly, even if the Caps somehow get by Boston. So I think for me, you talk about matching up with the perfection line, and I think it's obviously offensively that's going to probably matter more in terms of, you know, forwards and everything like that. But I think who you put on the blue line there could matter too. And if you're able to kind of balance it out a little bit more, maybe that could help, no?
Yeah. I mean, I think it all makes sense. You know, Carlson played something like 33 minutes in game three, which is a lot. And he played most of those minutes pretty well. But, you know, it lightened the load on him, spread it out a little bit more, try to find some groups that some pairs that work a little bit better than what you've got going, because, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily working. But again, you know, through 60 minutes of game three, I thought the Caps were the better team. So, so
what do we know ultimately?
Yeah, right. So who know? I mean, I guess, you know, maybe you wait until they shit the bed entirely in a game before you start switching it up. But by then it's going to be too late.
Yeah. Well, I guess the other kind of big piece I want to talk about, and then we'll conclude with something small and get out of here. I look at the various absences, and I mean, you alluded to this earlier about just the pure impact of losing Lars Eller, because that was a guy that it seemed like really centered around the Caps' plans in terms of how to kind of match up with Boston's top line, and also to a lesser extent, but still there, their second line. So I guess, kind of like, what has been your, from what you've seen so far, the Caps have been without Eller for basically a game and a half. What kind of role, you know, if he's able to come back, what kind of role do you think are they just going to put him back in against that top line? Or are you going to kind of, do you think that they might need to modulate this and even it out a little bit more?
I think that you can, probably, if he's good to go, you put him back in that line, in that defensive role. I think that theoretically, Nick Backstrom can also play some of that role, especially with Kuznetsov back. You know, in theory, you have you've taken some of that offensive responsibility off of Nick Backstrom's shoulders. You know, it's different when you're centering Alex Ovechkin than when you're centering Mantha, you know, and Oshie. You know, the expectations are different and your role's a little bit different. You know, so I think if Eller can come back, you have you probably have three centers that you feel okay going up against that top line, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know that the Dowd line's been sort of buried by them, but they sure have converted on their chances, and they've had a lot of shifts at the other end. I mean, it's not ideal, but you're not scared out of your mind against them. So, you know, I think that you could, you probably slot him right back in, try to get him out against that Bergeron line, and you know, Backstrom and Dowd chip in when they can, in sort of a defensive focused line. And then Backstrom's line's also pseudo offense. I mean, they do need a lot more from the top six. And you have, the Kuznetsov line, as just an all offense line, if you can get it, but it's hard to get those matchups, especially on the road. So, you know,
the Caps are going to have to win at least one road game too. So I got to figure this out. And I guess, like, let's conclude with the goaltending. I'm concluding with this because I think I have a pretty clear answer to this, but who would you start tomorrow? Well, I guess this is going to be going out, presumably most people will be listening to this on Friday. Who would you go with tonight to be the starter?
Samsonov. I don't think it's even a question. He was very good. You want to show faith in him. You don't bench a guy because of one mistake. I mean, of course, we can get into a bigger discussion about other mistakes that the guy has made on and off the ice. But
for a different podcast.
Yeah. If you don't go back to him after he played that game and gave your team every chance to win it, you know, I don't know what we're doing here. So, you know, just purely from an asset management standpoint, you know, whether or not you're going to move on from this guy, you put together another couple games like that and you can get something for him this summer if you do want to move on from him. Or you can start thinking about, you know, I know with Samsonov, it's kind of loosey with the football right now, but I think that, you know, you trot him out there and see what he does. If he craps himself, you know, and you're down 3-1, maybe you go back to Anderson and Samsonov never plays again for the organization. But to me, he clearly earned another start, and I'd put him back in there without hesitation.
Yeah, and I think for me, the way I kind of have thinking about it at this point is, I know the Caps are only down 2-1 and all three games have gone to overtime, but, you know, I think we sat here and we kind of dissected problems about, you know, the Bruins have really paused to the Capitals. And I, like, frankly, the Caps might need a goalie that can steal a couple of these games. Samsonov came really close to stealing that game against Boston, frankly. Like, he was really good. And not only that, you look at the way he made the saves. Craig Anderson, yes, he made a lot of saves, but he gave up a lot of rebounds, which, again, you would expect for a guy who doesn't play very much and who's 39 or whatever. But, I mean, I think it's clear that when they're at their best, it's going to be Samsonov versus any of the Caps goalies. So, you know, I think that a way the Caps could win this series still is Samsonov could stand on his head for four more games or three more games or whatever. And that's a path there, but you don't get that with Craig Anderson. Craig Anderson, maybe he could stand on his head for a couple of games, but it's probably not going to be a super long-term thing. Whereas Samsonov, you know, maybe he could do that. Probably not.
Yeah.
But maybe he could.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, come on, the Caps have seen it, you know, here with Varlamov the year that he came in for Jose Theodore. It happens, you know, and it definitely can. And the upside there is to me a lot greater. So I totally agree with you. You could see him just getting white hot and going on a run, but you know. It's not going to happen if this team doesn't play better in front of him and start scoring some 5-on-5 goals and from someone other than the fourth line. So, you know, Godspeed to Samsonov. But, you know, this is a team sport and it's going to take a team effort to come back and win this series.
Yep, agreed. All right, well, on the note of JP agreeing with me about something, we'll call it a wrap. JP, anything else you feel the need to say about the Washington Capitals?
Nope, not
all right. Okay. I enjoy that whenever I ask you to plug something, you seem to plug a different social media platform that is not Twitter. So, John Press, where can people find you and your various musings on things?
No, I guess Twitter. Twitter's the only place to really find me.
You don't mention your Capitals thoughts on Untappd?
No, Well, every once in a while you'll find a Caps beer related comment, but no.
Any good ones, really? Like, frankly, I will admit, I mean, I'm in DC now for the first time in a while, so I haven't had much exposure to Capitals beers, but is there any one you'd recommend?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the ones that, like the Aslan beer that they did with Craig Laughlin the Astro Lab one.
Yeah.
They're all right. They're good enough and they support a very good cause. So, you know, anytime you can, drink beer and do some good, I am 1,000% behind that. So, So I'll plug Craig Laughlin's beers.
I like that. That's a unique angle. That was creative. Well, all right, real quick. You can find the show at Draper's Rink Radio, on all major podcasts, including Spotify now, I believe. I think we just got an email from Megaphone saying that they're going to add that, so that's exciting. You can find me at GregY_JR. You can find the show at Draper's Rink Radio. If you like it, please rate, write, subscribe, review. There are now other Capitals podcasts, although I think we're like either number one or two, somewhere up there. But if you like it, it really helps people find the show. And feel free to interact with only JP and not me on Twitter. I'm mostly kidding, although I'm like 95% not kidding. So, all right, with that, we'll Adam and I will probably be back next week. sorry for the inconsistent scheduling. I, you know, have been traveling a lot, so there you go. But with that, stay tuned, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.